Hey, football fans, BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app.
Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon.
Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In jail.
Unbelievable.
This is 2 years after the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. This is Alex Hunter. This is Mary Keenan. You know, the one that everybody says, oh, she's a hero for exonerating the Ramseys. She didn't exonerate anybody. She issued an apology, talked about DNA, which she covered up the stuff that she was told because it wasn't mentioned in her apology. The Ramseys never should have been removed. There never should have been an apology issued. But people are saying, oh, yeah, this Mary Keenan's a hero. No, she ain't. She was part of this problem. Matter of fact, during this time frame, she's the one who's in charge of the plea bargains. So that's Jerry Berry. So you got the pedophile attorney who's protected. You can't even arrest him because everybody knows and he's just left untouched. Now you got a guy after the Ramsey murder who's a child pornographer, caught dead to rights molesting 3 girls, and you can't even put him in jail. This is the district attorney's office that you think that's going to get to the bottom of the Ramsey case?
After JonBenet. So, like, she totally died in vain.
You know, look, she died, and it's been CYA time in that town since that murder. Cover your ass.
Yeah. Have a lot of these folks passed away or are they still around?
Jerry Berry recently died.
Did he?
Yeah, he died. Mm-hmm. You know, so you just got to start putting all these cases together.
And just because Jerry Berry happened after the Ramsey case, and that was it, 99? You know, he was doing it for a long time. That doesn't mean he wasn't doing it prior or, you know, to JonBenet. You know, this is a guy that owned Jerry Enterprises that even Lou Smith couldn't figure out what type of business it was.
Unreal. I just saw a Daily Camera article from 8/14/99 about Jerry Berry. Police find albums of child porn and seize 5 computers.
Yeah.
They took a ton of stuff out of his house. And I remember I actually had interaction. I dealt with I bet you that article you're reading is by Christopher Anderson.
It's actually just an excerpt, but there was another thing about Allen Ginsberg. Do you know who that is? Ginsberg?
Allen Ginsberg, the poet?
He was a member of NAMBLA, the North American Man Boy Love Association. And he was a former Boulder resident, and his motto was sex by 8 or it's too late.
Oh, that's NAMBLA's motto.
That's so gross. Oh. These people.
So welcome to Boulder. This is why we call it the Boulder Syndrome.
No kidding.
And there are other cases which we're not even talking about, but we haven't gotten to the granddaddy of them all, which is the Ballard case, which my brother, who really, he did a great job working that case. He's going to take you through that case now.
All right, Jim.
Well, talk about the Ballard case. The Ballard case, this was considered the worst child sex abuse case in Colorado history, right? Which no one ever heard of.
Is it B-A-L-L-A-R-D? Ballard?
B-A-L-L-A-R-D, yep.
Okay.
And you had seven children that were involved, and they ranged from like ages 5 to 13-ish, right around there. And their abuse, you know, the timelines like 1987 to 1991, right around there. And so the Ballard kids, they were tortured. They were raped by their own parents and by their neighbors, who were Marcia and Dennis Dunnan. So you had Mike Ballard, Patricia Ballard, Dennis Dunnan, and Marcia Dunnan. And they were abusing these Ballard kids, okay? And while they were living in several towns, Boulder being one, Longmont, Lafayette, they were spread out. They moved a lot in Boulder County. Now, the Ballards and Dunnans in the affidavit, because we got a lot of paperwork on them, they were abusing other children in the neighborhood as well. And they were pimping out their kids, according to the affidavit, to strangers, to neighbors, and adults in the community. Okay? So they were pimping their kids out to all players in the community. But what happened was, every time caseworkers were assigned to the Ballard children for neglect issues, the Ballards would then pick up and move to another town, and they would continue their abuse. That was their pattern. And so, like, the Ballard children, they would wind up, you know, DHHS would go there, you know, and these kids would be suffering from wounds, like cigarette burns, bite marks, broken limbs, gangrene, and they would go to court and they would keep them with the Ballards. They would never take them out of the home. Right. So this abuse happened they would just pack up, move to another town, and pick up the abuse. Eventually, you know, the Ballards didn't live up to one of their court orders, and it was in 1991. And the kids were finally taken out of a foster home, and they were taken out of the Ballard home and put into the foster home. And the Ballards wound up being arrested in Milwaukee for additional crimes. But when the kids that were in the foster home got comfortable, they began telling stories of what the parents were doing to them. And that's when the foster parents, you know, went to the police, and a task force was formed, because these kids were, like I said, they were tortured. There was incest. It was all types of stuff going, pimping out to neighbors, adults, other kids, all types of stuff was happening.
Teenagers. So,
these kids were just totally abused. Wow. I mean, horrific, horrific, horrific. So the Ballard and Dunnans were arrested finally, and they were charged with 400 counts of abuse, 80 counts for Ballard, 96 counts of sexual assault, 6 counts of exploitation, pandering. Patricia Ballard got 78 counts of child abuse, 180 counts of sexual assault. You know, the Dunnans got a slew of counts against them. So a task force was formed in 92, and it was formed in Boulder, Longmont, Lafayette, and Broomfield, right? And mental health agencies were brought in to investigate what transpired. Now, to this day, we could never find out what the task force, any paperwork on it. So what they actually did, usually task force are formed before, you know, in investigating, not after. In this case, they wound up forming the task force after the Ballards were arrested. Huh. It was just kind of bizarre. So in the end, Mr. Ballard, Mike Ballard, got, he served 9 years.
Nine.
Patricia Ballard got 8 years. Marcia Dunnan got nothing. Right, she didn't do any time for her crimes.
Wow.
And Dennis Dunnan, for a very weird reason, got life in jail.
Right. It pretty much is. I mean, on the incest alone, they could have put everybody away for life.
Yeah. But once again, the reason they got these, you know, for the amount of charges that were put against them and the severity of the charges, they gave them a plea deal. why they pled them out makes no sense.
And you have to understand, this plea deal was so outrageous, so unbelievable that the kids, the victims, were angered by it. The people in social services working with the kids were angered by it. You had attorneys in the prosecutor's office, in the DA's office, resign, and not just resign, they left the profession. That's how disgusted they were. And you know who was in charge of this case? Everybody's hero now because of Netflix, Mary Keenan.
And I wound up getting in touch with a person that was directly involved in the case, that knew what was going on in the DA's office and also had involvement with the children. And this is what this person told me. This person said there was a power struggle going on in the DA's office from Jump Street with this case. Nobody wanted to touch it.
What was the phrase that person used? This case was the Ramsey case before the Ramsey case happened.
Yes, correct. Yeah. This person said they conducted multiple interviews with the children, which the person believed it was the wrong approach because it went against the handbook, the protocol of how you're supposed to handle it. So they said they did it wrong. They couldn't understand the plea bargaining, what we talked about happened in all these other cases, that the plea bargaining was totally absurd in the case. And this was interesting. This person said that there were threats toward the children coming from the DA's office. And when I pressed on that, about what do you mean threats? The DA's office was threatening the kids. They wanted them to meet them on their own turf, meaning they wanted them to come to the DA's office. Some of the kids were in the hospital for injuries, and they were threatening them, saying, if you don't come to our office, you know, we're not going to charge. They're threatening, we won't charge them.
We'll send you home to mommy and daddy.
Yeah, they were traumatizing. They were threatening the victims.
Wow.
For whatever reason.
Once again, Mary Keenan was the main player from the prosecutor's side. So, hero?
And then, the fascinating part of it all is that we got a list because it was such a bad case that these kids wound up having their identities changed. They had name changes. Okay. So they had alias. So they moved to different parts of the country when they got older. And mind you, the kids in the case, they were distraught over the sentencing. They were disgusted by it. Okay. And as they became adults, they moved to different places, changed their names. But we were given a list of names to look at that possibly could be some of these kids, and we made some phone calls, and I tracked down one of the children, now an adult, lived out in the Midwest. And when I got him on the phone, he was shocked. First of all, I this is something that happened a long time ago, and he was like, he couldn't get over the fact that I found him.
That you even knew?
That he pressed me on, how'd you even get my information? Because I'm protected. I'm like, I was given some names. I made some phone calls, and you were one of the names. And so you're obviously one of the kids. So once I calmed him down from that, I started asking him about the case. And I asked him, a couple of questions. One, if there was any prominent people in the community that played any part in his abuse. And he couldn't recall prominent people, but he said there were church people that were involved. I said, okay. And I asked him, I said, was there anybody in law enforcement that may have been involved in Longmont and Boulder? And this is what he told me. I said, did they play a part in the abuse? And this is what he said. They were directly orchestrating or accessories.
Wow.
Why would a child victim tell me that? And I said, where? And he said, Boulder and Longmont. So
this is, I'm sorry, Jim, to jump in. This is important. This conversation, because this victim is saying, as my brother said, that they were that the Boulder police and Longmont police were orchestrating the abuse of these kids. Now, with the plea bargains being so ridiculously light, with the Ballard, you know, Mike Ballard getting maybe 9 years, should have got life, gets 9 years. Patricia Ballard got 5 years, served less than that. Should have got life, but she gets 5 years out before that. Marsha Dunning,
zero.
She got no jail time whatsoever. But yet Dennis Dunning gets a life sentence. This case screams, people gave names, Dennis didn't. Just want to make that clear. I mean, that should be a question. Why did Dennis go to jail for life and everybody else get an absolutely ridiculous, you know, plea bargain? They most likely gave them names because the Ballards and Dunnins, they were picture takers. They were also film takers of their kids' abuse.
For sure. They made some good deal, sweetheart deal there, didn't they?
And if they were pimping them out all over Boulder County, all under the eyes of the court system that they had been since like 1988, social services, but yet they were able to pimp their kids out to all these people. You know, we got some of the paperwork. The kids are mentioning, you know, we're being taken here, we're being taken there, neighbors are abusing us. There were other children involved. There was no other investigation done.
Nobody else was looked at.
Nobody else was arrested, even though they said neighbors were involved in the abuse. Nope. It was just the Ballards and the Dunning and the Dunnins. Dennis got life. Everybody else gets a sweetheart plea bargain. And Marsha, you get to walk away free.
Crazy.
Yeah. So when he mentions that the police were directly orchestrating it, I said, okay. I said, we got to talk some more. So we had a brief conversation and he agreed to talk more, you know, about it. So I wind up taking another reporter from Colorado, and we fly out to the Midwest, right, to stay at a hotel and to agree that he would meet us there and we could interview him and get him on record. And Ollie Gray was really on board with us going because he's the one that said that we need to go out there and interview him, especially about the police being involved. But when we got there and we made contact with him, when he was supposed to come, he got cold feet and never showed up. So we flew out there and it was, he never got in contact with us again. He got totally spooked.
Wow.
Yeah, but when you go and when you get the police affidavit, the arrest affidavit, you start reading it. In there, there's a conversation at one of these parties that one of the girls recalls, and they're supposed to be, they were promised money that would be given to them for sex acts, and they weren't getting any money. So they said in the affidavit, quote, "We go to a police officer who was there and said, hey, we're getting abused here and we're not getting paid or we're not getting money and, you know, we're getting abused." And it says Mike Ballard and the police officer laughed. That's right in the paperwork.
Oh, my God.
And there's thousands and thousands. We got about 500 pages. You have some like, is it Jim? Is it Lafayette? No, was it Longmont or Lafayette who told us, we don't care what laws you use, you're never going to get the paperwork from us?
I think it was Longmont.
It was Longmont.
Yep.
Boulder District Attorney's Office, they got plenty of paperwork, too, in regards to that investigation. What they charge us, Jim, what they want to charge us, $8,000?
Yep.
Something.
Wow.
They can make up whatever price they want.
Of course. Make it hard for you to get.
But we were able to get, you know, 500 pages, and it's outrageous. You know, these kids were saying this, that it involved a lot of people in the community. It wasn't just the four.
Now, but once again, we're not saying it's the, you know, the entire Boulder police force was involved with this, but there are people in the force that were corrupt.
Was it one cop? Was it two cops?
This How is many?
Right.
You know, this is important. But the fact is that, well, no, again, even what the state's largest task force in the history of the state, which to this day, nobody can find paperwork from the task force itself, but we know there was one. They couldn't do it. They couldn't make any other arrests.
Even cutting those deals, right?
Just cutting those deals.
And keep in mind the years. So this is happening, what, 91, 92, Jim, the case is adjudicated? Yep. That's 1992. That's 4 years before the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. Now, if you're an investigator working on the Ramsey case, you know, what's that, what's the old expression, Jim, from Casablanca? Mm. What do? You round up the usual suspects.
Yeah.
Right? You're looking for a sadist pedophile, right? That's the profile of your killer that you're looking for. Wouldn't you go back to a case like the Ballard case and find out, oh, well, who are these people that these kids are mentioning? Because these kids age from age 1 to 12.
Makes sense.
They're very young. So, you know, if you're looking for a pedophile, I don't know, maybe 5 years early, you know, 4 years earlier, maybe your killer was involved in the Ballard case. You know, it was a sex torture. It was a torture sex ring. They tortured kids.
And I think probably would be now to bring up Christopher Anderson.
Yeah, the Christopher Anderson story. But the thing is, how come the media never, how come we tell this story in 2024 and nobody's ever heard of it?
A lot.
When it happened 4 years before the murder of JonBenet.
Right. Why wasn't that big news?
Exactly. It wasn't.
And there was one officer that we got in touch with in the case. This guy, he was triggered. Like, we're talking years and years and years after this case that we get in touch with him. And I mentioned this case. This guy starts freaking out on me, cursing me up and down, how, you know, I'm traumatized about this case. You know, he was threatening me on the phone and this and that. And said, hey, man, we're just trying to get information about what was going on. Like, he shut me down so fast. And this was like over a decade after, you know, more than that. 15 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
And so, Frank, you wind up trying, you tried to get in touch with him.
Yeah. So I talked to this cop and it's the same thing, you know, hey, how are you? You know, normal. And I tell him, hey, it's Frank Zell. I'm doing a little research. Oh yeah. What are you researching? Oh, the Ballard case. Just screaming top of his lungs. F you. What, why are you looking into this case? Just screaming profanities.
What the hell?
I've never heard a reaction. And I'm like, hey, man, calm down, bro. We believe that there's something wrong with this case. This is why we're asking. Then he starts screaming. It was that effing judge. It was all that judge's fault. He kept on giving those kids back to them over and over. And I'm like, what? And I'm like, we thought maybe social service. He goes, no, they did the right thing. It was that effing judge. And he goes, why are you guys interested in this? Why do you want this kid's name? Why, you know, who are you looking for? I said, we're trying to find this. We're trying to find out if you know where some of these kids are. Now, at this point, these aren't kids anymore. These kids are in their 30s. So I tell him, I said, look, we just want to talk to them to try to find out additional information, because it says in the affidavit that there were other people involved. And what this cop said to me, I'll never forget it, because, man, my chin hit the floor. I said, we're just trying to help. And he said, how do I know that you two aren't pedophiles and that you're looking to shut him up?
What?
And I said, but you're talking 20 years after the fact. And that was his statement.
Holy.
That he thought that we were, how do I know? Why would I tell you anything about any of the victims in case you guys were pedophiles looking to shut them up.
Wild.
So who the hell were these kids being pimped out to make this guy act that way, traumatized by it? Now, so I forgot where I was going to go.
With the judge.
Oh, the judge. Yeah, good call, Jim. So the judge, I find out that the judge in this case is Judge Belapani. He was the one that, for whatever reason, kept on giving these kids back to the parents, even though they showed signs of abuse, you know, gangrene, as my brother mentioned, gangrene, just terrible injuries. Anybody want to take a guess on the judge who sat the grand jury?
Oh, Lord.
The Ramsey grand jury?
Same one?
Judge Belapani. Judge Belapani, in 1998, that was his case. He sat the Ramsey grand jury, but inexplicably recused himself right after he sat the grand jury and left the country, saying that he was going to teach law in Egypt.
What?
Oh, I kid you not.
What the?
That's how the grand jury got started.
Wow.
Was with the judge recusing himself out of nowhere and leaving the country. That was the same judge during the Ballard case who was kept on returning the kids to the parents. So, once again, this is something that the media, the mainstream media, should have been all over that. Right.
Now, there's a lot of context here.
So once again, it's all about context. The DA's office ain't heroes. It's the opposite. They were protecting people, letting pedophiles off with crazy sentences, the Ballard case being the absolute worst, that attorneys quit in disgust and then quit being attorneys because of this plea bargain. Hello, Mary Keenan. So this is going to lead to a talk. Now we're going to jump back in time a little bit after Nancy came forward. So now we're talking 2000 at some point. I call up a reporter at the Boulder Daily Camera, named Christopher Anderson. And we're debating the merits of Nancy. Christopher Anderson did not believe Nancy, which is fine. We debated back and forth, and we decided to agree to disagree. And Christopher Anderson asked me what my theory was on the Ramsey case. And I said, well, you know, we believe that it's a sex ring. We don't believe John or Patsy Ramsey killed their child, but we believe they were involved in something that led to the kid's death. And because of their involvement, they had to help cover it up. And we believe it could involve wealthy people in the community. And Christopher Anderson goes, And I said, what? And Chris was like, that reminds me of something. And I said, what does it remind you of? And he said, well, he goes, back in the early 90s, there were a bunch of rich people that got swept up by the police. They got picked up, but they swept it under the rug. Now, this happens all the time. And a great example of it, if people don't know, if you've seen the movie Spotlight, about what happened in Boston in the Archdiocese and the priests and all the priests that were molesting kids for years and years and years, what would happen is that the police would make arrests and they would bring the priests in, and then the district attorney would go in and he would talk to the cops, talk to the priest, make a phone call to the archdiocese, and then the priest would be let go. There would be no arraignment. So nobody ever knew that these priests were being arrested. And this was going on for years in Boston. Apparently, the same thing was going on in Boulder. or at least in the early 90s, because Christopher Anderson told me about these rich people that had gotten picked up by the police and it got covered up. So I go, Chris, how do you know this? And Chris said, well, when I started at the Boulder Daily Camera, I started as the Boulder Police beat reporter. And the person that I was replacing told me about it. He goes, there's a list of names of who got picked up. And he goes, how about this? How about we write an article about your theory on the Ramsey case, your sex ring theory, and we combine it with, you know, the list of names and what they, these people got picked up for. So I'm pumped. I'm like, finally, man, somebody in the mainstream media is going to write an article about what we've been saying and about, you know, a list of names. And I said, do you know where this list is? And Christopher Anderson said, oh, yeah, I know exactly where it is. That's not a problem. He goes, I'm going to give you a byline as a researcher. So I was pumped. Oh, this is going to be great. So I call this guy like every 2 days. Chris, we're still doing this, right? He goes, yep, don't worry, Frank. We're doing it. You know, around the fourth or fifth day, I call him again. And I'm like, Chris, what's going on? And he's like, don't worry, Frank. He goes, I'm going on vacation. When I get back, we're doing the article. I'm like, awesome. And then I get a call a few days later, and they said, hey, you watching the news? And I'm like, no. And they're like, something happened in Florida. You may want to check it out. So I go to the site that the person told me about. Christopher Anderson left Boulder, hopped on a plane, landed in Florida, went to his house, changed into his beach clothes, walked onto the beach, and then was struck by lightning and killed.
That is insane.
So, yeah, I was like, oh, man, maybe this, it was, so this is 2000, and I'm like, oh, man, maybe this is never meant to be. I said, I couldn't believe it. And then that's always stuck with me, is that there was a list then, probably doesn't exist now, but then there was a list of rich men. What was going on in the early 90s in Boulder and the surrounding area where possibly rich men could be picked up for abusing kids and then have it covered up? The only thing going on in the early 90s is what my brother just talked about.
La, 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 okay.
It was the Ballard case.
The task force.
The task force. But we'll never know those names because Christopher Anderson was struck by lightning and killed.
And once again, no one knows where this list was.
Nope. There had to be.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Other people that knew it existed, but I happened to get in touch with a guy who knew about it, and he told me about it. But unfortunately, he didn't get the listening time.
That is so. That is so unbelievable.
Yeah, you can read about it. There's newspaper articles.
I just shared one in the chat, just in case anybody was doubting that.
Yeah.
True story.
Hey, any of these cases that we're talking about, don't take our word for it. Do your own research. Come to your own conclusions.
I've been sharing links as you guys have been, you know, mentioning different things. So
the public was kept blissfully unaware of this stuff by the media. You know, getting you all, everybody focused on the house, on the house, on the house. It's either John did it, Patsy did it, or this lone intruder did it. Don't ask questions. Don't look anywhere else in the town. As author Steven Singular, who we worked with, we'll get to him when we talk about the Manchurian Doll, that we worked with him on and off. He summed this case up better than anybody else ever had. He wrote I think his book was the first book ever written on a Ramsey case. It was called Presumed Guilty. Came out in 1999.
And if people are interested in that, they should get the updated version.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. The updated version, Steve added information in 2016. That is the only book you should read on this case. Because Steve had access early on. He was in Hunter's office. I remember, I think there's a part in the book where Hunter asks him to do, you know, for Steve to do an investigation and report directly to him about stuff he's learning about the town. You know, we're in it for a chapter. The poems are in there. There's other great information in there. You can get it on Amazon, but it has to be the 2016 e-version or the Kindle version of Presumed Guilty. But anyway, he summed this case up perfectly. When a town tries to protect itself, the truth becomes obscured. That is exactly what happened. The town was protecting itself because of what was going on in the town. They didn't want it coming out. And so the truth of the Ramsey case suffered. So where are we going next?
Oh, man. We still got a long way. I mean,
choose your own adventure.
The poems. I mean, this is where, you know, when we start getting into the poems, though, we have to be careful of names. But yeah, and I mean, we got to talk about the Manchurian Doll poem. That's the next one.
I can pull that up right now.
Yeah, and Stephen Miles, I mean, has to get brought into this. I mean,
okay. So while you are pulling that up, I mean, hopefully your viewers aren't getting too, your listeners aren't getting too screwed up, because I know we're throwing a ton of information at them.
I think they're good. They're good.
All right.
I've been following along. Yeah.
How long do you want to go, Jen? It's up to you.
I'm good. Keep going, guys. I've got a couple people in chat that are familiar with, you know, everything you're speaking of, and they're kind of filling in, you know, some blanks. So it's going well.
Okay.
All right. As long as you're listening.
No, it's awesome. Thank you so much for all of this information.
Yeah, it's tough. Like, so we're trying to highlight, you know, give you the highlights of over 28 years of information.
Yeah, it's a lot.
And we're not even talking ancillary stories.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
I worked with Lou from 2003 to 2010. I gave you a couple of, you know, talks, you know, a couple of, you know, some information about, you know, what we discussed. Ollie, I worked with for 14 years. This was John's private investigator. You know, why would you work with me knowing what I believe? You know what I mean?
Yeah, good question.
But anyway, so Stephen Miles, who comes into play here. Stephen Miles was the first person thrown under the bus in the Ramsey case. His name and picture were splashed upon one of the tabloids as, you know, the Ramsey killer. Okay, Stephen Miles was a photographer in the town of Boulder. Yeah, he, gay man. He had his interests in men were kind of like the 18, 19, 20 year old range. You know, not my cup of tea, but you know, nothing wrong with it. Those, you know, you're an adult.
Right.
If you're a gay adult, you want to have an affair with a gay older man, that's up to you. But he wasn't a violent guy. He was gay. Nothing to do with girls at all. But yet, his name gets leaked as being the killer. Mm. Whether it was from the cops or the Ramsey camp. I think it was the Ramsey camp. So back in the late 90s, Lee Hill, who was the attorney who represented Nancy from California, represents Stephen Miles in a defamation case against the John Ramsey and against the tabloids. The case is, they don't win. You know, the case is thrown out eventually. But to this day, Lee Hill was the only one ever to get John Ramsey under oath. Now, you would think that the cops would want to take a look at that, right?
You'd think, yeah.
Right? Oh, John, you know.
I mean, they wanted to talk to him, and he wouldn't talk to them, right? So, yeah.
Right? Lee offered to give it to him to look at. They said, no, thanks. Nah, we're okay. We don't want to look at it. I mean, make it make sense. But anyway, so in... So in the early 2000s, Lee says, hey, I want you to, you know, he makes an introduction and introduces me to Stephen Miles. So, you know, we talk on the phone. I wind up working Stephen Miles as a source for 22 years. Never steered me wrong. He's the one that gave me the pedophile attorney. It was his friends who were some of the victims when they were younger. It was Miles that tipped me off. And he would even say of that pedophile attorney, you know, I don't like hanging out with him because he does things to young kids. And that's not my scene. Stephen Miles wouldn't hurt a fly. But anyway, Steve asked me, Frank, so what's your theory exactly on the case? And again, I say the same thing. Don't believe John or Patsy Ramsey did it, but we believe they were involved in some way, shape, or form. They put their daughter in harm's way. She died, and then they had to cover up for the murderer or murderers of their daughter because of their sudden involvement. And he's like, I need to introduce you to somebody. And I'm like, who? And he goes, I can't give you the name. He goes, let's just call this person Mr. X. So I'm like, all right, give me Mr. X's phone number. He goes, they won't let me give it to you. I'm like, okay. I'm like, well, they can call me. And he's like, they're afraid you'll get their number. I'm like, Steve, well, you know, this is going to be pretty hard if we don't figure this out. And I'm like, all right, let's do this, you know, let's go around our ass and get to our elbow, and we'll go that route. I relay the questions to you. You call Mr. X, get their answer to the questions, and then relay it back to me. That way, there's no way I can find out. He agrees. So we do this little back and forth. It turns out Mr. X was part of the jet set crowd in Boulder, very wealthy, and hung out with other wealthy, powerful people in the town. That was until they started doing things to kids. Mr. X said these people could cater to every whim. So I continue to give questions to Steve. Steve then gets back to me and says, Mr. X has had enough, doesn't want to continue. and has told me to tell you, please don't try to ever find me. I have a family. You know what this case is like. I got kids. I can't get myself involved. And I'm like, all right. That was one of my biggest mistakes, kindness. I shouldn't have stopped then. Kept going, but anyway. And that story is going to come into play later on.
Well, there's no manual that comes with something like this.
Yeah, like I said, this is it's a lot of information.
By the way, Jay,
go ahead, Jim.
I sent you an article called The Unusual Suspect by Westward.
Okay.
And it's on Stephen Miles.
Okay. I'll share it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
And Stephen was such a nice guy. He never steered me wrong. He connects to so many different parts of this with information, invaluable as a source. And he desperately wanted to find out what happened to JonBenet. He really did. Very nice man. Sweet. I guess the word sweet and gentle is a way to describe him, Steve. Sweet and gentle. Miss talking to him. But anyway, so we've read the Three Men poem. Now this is the poem. So when Lee leaves the country back in 2003, I get some Nancy stuff and I get the Three Men poem. Unbeknownst to me, Stephen Singular, who I've been in touch with since his book came out, maybe even before the book came out, because Bob McFarland, after I got done dealing with him, said, you know what? You got to talk to this guy, Stephen Singular, because he's on the right track, too. He's writing a book. So I got in touch with Steve in 98. And I told him my theory. And he was like, well, get back in touch with me after you read my book. So when I did, he's the only mainstream author. He's the only mainstream guy that got it, that was on it from the beginning. Steve is given other information. And he is given the Manchurian doll. And this is the Manchurian doll. They say that innocence prevails and evil cannot master time. And riches, fame, and fortune sow some evil seeds, which then will grow to devour their progenitors. Of 30 duos, some must know that they themselves will out their crime and have. With an old man's fleeting leer, the cycle of the dolls came round. It poisoned sick the world's Yule cheer. They use their own in passing down. The rituals remain unfound. And Christmas break gives time to heal. Parties abound, all wounds congeal but one. At blithely festive New Year's bash, some candidates en route stop there, as if by feigning toasts and cheer that could undo the fatal sash the week before. But handlers die, and what to do? With Christmas nigh, the one in lieu did err. St. John would roll over in his grave to know the smut that crossed his nave. Yet Christmas Day he held her near as if he knew she'd disappear that very night. An elder cleric's errant son, his extant crush now on the run. Did they supply the candidates with fodder for their lewd e-fun? Do tell. Truth blazes in, but from McFar. The hunt team's snare was too adept, with keen eyes placed to guard the bar. The talk of dolls in silence kept. They tripped the truth while jurors prepped, then sacked the hunter as inept. But hunters now? The hunted are. Death officers perfidy bared through, though taints of roofs fast disappeared. No antidote this Snow White spared. The other signs were clearly there, yet all were hastily interred, and silky dressed and golden haired, truth slept. of one who died outstretched on high, most gentle hands his swaddle made, in sepulchral clothes she, I can't even read that, in sepulchral clothes she laid, nor twines replayed round captive limb. This mortal braid is our demise, when angels perish in its vice, betrayed by kindred's galling lies, as purloined justice turn blind eyes, a panic lapse left unsurmised, clues carried home, already prone, sleep guised. However, one must study greats. Take, for example, William Yeats, who spoke about Byzantium. No governor could stop the run. Your split in planning took its toll. Your race spun out of control. Things fall apart. The Antichrist lurks in the head. It festers in the carnal eye, which takes young victims from their bed to suffer that and then to die. Now vacant, half-glazed tears are shed from ambidextrous author's stead. One doll, now grown, hides in dread. Another Manchurian candidate is dead.
Wow.
So Steve has that poem. I have my poem. Now, the Singulars, Steve and his wife Joyce, who were on the Netflix special, they were the ones talking about Randy Simons, the photographer, the pageant photographer for JonBenet. Unfortunately, that was Steve's final appearance because he passed away earlier this year.
Oh, man.
Sadly. But so Lee gives me this, the three men poem. Steve's got this poem. So for about 5 years, since we're not working together on the case, we were like the Singulars were their own brand. And me and my brother
were something that different.
We were something different. And the Singulars, they never really wanted to work with us because of how we operated.
They didn't want to be with the plurals.
You
guys were the heavy, plurals, the brothers.
Heavy-handed.
Yeah, it's the way we did things back then. They did not like our heavy-handed ways of doing things. But anyway, that's a story for another time. So me and Steve were talking on the phone in like 2008, and we start talking about, I forget if I brought it up or Steve brought it up, about the poem. Now, we're both under the assumption that we have the same one. So I'm like, oh, yeah, the poem. And he starts mentioning things, and I'm like, that's not in my poem. And he's like, what poem do you have? I'm like, I got this poem that has three names at the end. He's like, what? Yes, I've been calling it the Three Men poem. And then I tell him about Lou and, you know, Lou asking for it, begging for it. And he's like, Frank, you got to send me this. So I do. And he's shocked. He actually brings this to the district attorney's office.
Oh, wow.
In 2008. He couldn't believe it. So now we have these two poems. Now, Lou was desperate to find out who wrote it. So we searched so this took about 8 years of my life to figure it out. All we had was envelopes. It had a Denver postmark, no return address. I think the return address was for the children.
Oh my God.
So all we had to go on was the writer of these poems was from Denver. And me and Lou were trying to figure it out. We did a couple of things. It didn't work out. We set up like a tip line, leaked a little bit of it out, didn't go anywhere. And then Lou's like, Frank, he goes, you might as well forget it. It's impossible to do. We're never going to figure it out. And I said, that's all right, Lou, I understand. I said, if you don't mind, I'm going to continue to look. And he's like, yeah, go ahead. That's fine. So we continue to look. And then once I know Singular has another poem, now I'm working with the Singulars to find out who wrote it. And some point around 2011, I have been working this guy as a source for now about 8 or 9 years. He's been dead on every time. I'm like, I'm not getting anywhere. We're trying to figure this out. Let me go to Stephen Miles, and see if, you know, he has any idea. So I call Steve up. I'm like, hey, Steve, I need a favor from you. I said, do you know anything or have you heard anything about poems? And immediately I knew, because he started stammering. He got all nervous with me, which he never is. And I'm like, Steve, calm down, man. I said, do you know something about it? You know something about poems? And he's like, yes. I'm like, okay. And then I began to explain. I'm like, you know, these are poems that were sent to Lee. I said, are these the poems that we are talking about? And he's like, yes. I said, how do you know about them? And he said, because I'm the one that mailed them.
He mailed them.
Mm-hmm.
The person who wrote the poems asked Stephen to do them a favor and to take a bus to Denver to mail these poems to Lee Hill, hence the Denver postmark, because they were trying to hide the fact that it came from Boulder. So now I got the deliverer. He didn't do anything wrong. He just did a friend a favor. But I'm like, Steve, my man, I've spent years trying to figure this out. So have other people. So has Lou Smith. I said, do you know who wrote them? Is the same person who gave them to you to mail the person that wrote them? He says, yes. I said, you know this person? He's like, they're my friend. And I said, Steve, I got to ask you for a really big favor now. I said, I need that name, my man. And he's like, it's going to cost me my friendship. And I said, I'm sorry, Steve. I said, but I really need your help, man. So he gives me the name, which now we have the name of this individual. We try to, after Steve gives me the name, and I'm dealing with the Singulars, and I give them the name, and we're trying to come up with an idea to get this person now to talk. And Steve says, hey, Frank, remember that talk you had when we first were introduced with Mr. X? I say, yeah. He goes, that's the poem writer.
Oh, my God.
I said, oh, baby. Oh, baby. So at this point, by the time we found this out, Lou has passed away. He died in 2010. We found this out in 2011. We tried to get this poem writer to speak. It did not go well. I got shut down. Steven got shut down. Matter of fact, he almost had the cops called on him because he actually rang the bell. I told him that wasn't going to work. So I came up with another idea. And I told Steve, I said, look, for this to work, we need to do like shock and awe. We got to stun this person. So I call up Lee Hill in Asia. And I go, Lee, I need a favor. I explain, I catch him up with the Stephen Miles telling us who the writer is. And I tell him how we're trying now to get this person to talk. We're not getting any, you know, we can't get anywhere. I said, Lee, I need you to come back to Boulder. I need you to hop on a plane, come back to Boulder, go to this person's house and ring their bell. And I think the shock of seeing you will maybe get them to talk, because they sent the poems out to help originally, because why write the poems? You put it in riddle form to disguise yourself, but you were still trying to help. Lee agrees. He comes all the way back from Asia, goes to the person out. The person is so stunned. So the plan works. The person's so stunned, they invite Lee in and they start talking. And Lee actually records some of the conversation. And he gets this individual to admit to writing the Manchurian Doll. The person does not admit to writing the Three Men poem, but once we knew who they were, the background, the writer gives themselves away in the Three Men poem. But this is after years of studying in it as little clues. And once you know the background of the writer, you can see that they wrote that too. But the Manchurian Doll is speculative. The Three Men poem is accusations about criminal activity in the church and about the murder of JonBenet Ramsey. So now we got the poem writer. I get to interview the poem writer. So does Steve. But eventually, the poem writer gets scared and backs away. Now, this is where it gets tricky, because information that we had in 2003 in the poems, we're now learning more. Now we got the writer of the poems, we got the deliverer of the poem in Stephen Miles, we got the writer of the poem, and the writer of the poem is part of St. John's Church, the Ramsey Church. And a big player of the church, a wealthy member. This person is not some crazy person that wrote a poem. They took their time with it. It was deliberate. Every word was chosen with meaning. And this isn't, you know, you can't label this person insane, because they're not. They're extremely wealthy. To give you an example, when you have a wedding and members of the Bush family attend your wedding, you got money.
Wow.
That's the writer.
Do you know the order the poems were written, or no?
No. We just know that they were delivered to Lee Hill. And Lee just knew they were important, but he had his own stuff going on, and he just wanted to make sure they got to the right people. Singular, Stephen was one. I was the other, and I got the juicy one. I got the Three Men poem, which then went to Lou, then to Steve once he found out about it.
Then to the DA's office.
Yeah, to the DA's office. Now, Jim, how do we go from here? Because we're jumping so far into the timeline. When do we bring up the tip call?
Jeez, dude.
A lot of information.
It is a lot.
Yeah. I mean,
I hate to say it, we want to hear it all, but I understand we don't have time for that.
It's up to you. I mean, we can leave it on a cliffhanger and say, okay, now we'll go into, we can do part two. If you want, it's up to your listeners. And it's 10:20. You know, me and my brother gave a symposium of sorts in Colorado at a foundation on this. And that's another story for another time.
I mean, I want to hear it all. I don't, like, I don't want you to have to leave anything out and have to pick and choose, because I feel like it's important. You know what I mean?
We're just trying to make sense. You know, we just want it to make sense for your listeners.
You've done a great job. It, so far, I think it's been very, very easy to understand.
It's up to you. You're the host. Jim, are you okay? Can you go on?
I mean, yeah, I can go on. But, I mean, it's like we're just starting the beginning of looking at the church. So you'd probably talking about, I don't know, hour and a half.
Well, you can keep going tonight a little bit more, and then we can do the, you know, you can stop it in another spot. Everybody's saying keep going. We want to hear it all.
Okay. I mean,
oh, and then Aristocat said part two with questions. We're greedy.
Okay. I mean, because that's true. I'm sure a lot of people have questions about the information that was presented tonight.
Right.
I mean, before. So it's like, I don't, you know, really, I don't know how to proceed. If we should just pause here, take questions, and then have a part two.
Well, we could do that. We can kind of talk through what we've went through tonight.
At the end of the day, Jay, we are your guests. How do you wish to proceed? It is.
Hey, you guys are the ones with the info, and you know,
yeah,
this
is your show.
Well, I would love to, you know.
Hey, football fans. BetMGM is giving you the chance to win up to $250,000 in bonus bets. It's all part of BetMGM's longest touchdown jackpot, where you'll be able to split the grand prize with anyone else who bet on the longest touchdown of the week. Log into your BetMGM account today and opt into the promo. Then, place an anytime touchdown wager of $10 or more on the player of your choice up to one player per game. If your player scores the longest touchdown of the week, you'll win a share of the $250,000. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This U.S. promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. For New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369. For Arizona, 1-800-NEXT-STEP. For Massachusetts, 1-800-327-5050. For Iowa, 1-800-BETS-OFF. For Puerto Rico, 1-800-981-0023. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are unrestricted bonus dollars that expire in 7 days. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
Now taxes is 100% free when you file in the TurboTax app if you didn't file with us last year.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just do your own taxes in the app by 2/18.
What if I have lots of forms?
All good, all 100% free.
What if I had 3 jobs?
Still 100% free.
What if I once saw Bigfoot?
That has nothing to do with taxes, so still 100% free.
Now that's what I'm talking about.
Now this is taxes. See if you qualify in the TurboTax app. Excludes TurboTax Live. Must start and file in app by 2/18.